right on the top. You can't go any farther. I always tell him he won't get much nearer heaven, grinning as if the joke was particularly apt. Lucy smiled back a little uncertainly. It is rather a long way up, isn't it? She murmured. But the view must be wonderful when you finally arrive. Oh, it is, miss. Trust Mr. Lestrange to find that out before he signed the lease. As she negotiated the final flight of stairs, Lucy thought that she knew three things about Stephen Lestrange. He suffered from indigestion. He might find it a little difficult to get into heaven by the road he was at present pursuing. And he was shrewd. He considered all the advantages before he signed such a thing as a lease. As for the indigestion, she had the remedy for that under her arm. Dr. Phillimore had left it on his desk with a note. Please drop this in at Charrington Mansions on your way home. I promised to do so 3 days ago, but forgot. That was so like poor old Dr. Phillimore. He was getting a little past things, but he never forgot anything important. So the case was quite obviously not serious. Lucy recognised the mixture at once, white and soothing and sedative, and she knew that it could work miracles under certain circumstances, particularly when the circumstances involved overindulged stomachs. On the top floor, she stood outside a white-painted door and waited before she pressed the bell. Sunlight flooded the corridor, streaming through a window that was made up of many different panes of brilliantly coloured glass, so that the effect was rainbow and dazzling. Lucy's short fair hair discovered a golden aureole, and her pale skin became flushed with rose. Her pink cotton dress turned to challenging violet, and the rest of her was an entrancing shade of green. She pressed the bell, but the result was so negligible that she had to press it again, and after waiting perhaps half a minute, she then waited a full minute before applying her finger to the glittering push button, and this time she could hear the summons shrilling all round the flat. She was turning away, having decided that the sufferer was not actually sitting waiting for his medicine, and that the best thing she could do was hand it over to the lift man for delivery in the right quarter later on, when the door was whipped open and a masculine voice said protestingly, "Don't go! Not if you've some legitimate reason for wasting my time, that is." Lucy turned back and regarded him in surprise. The only other thing she knew about Stephen Lestrange was that he was what is known as a fashionable portrait painter, and she was prepared for a certain amount of eccentricity, but not definite rudeness. This man was most decidedly rude, exercising so little control over the impatience that obviously possessed him that his voice was harsh and imperious, and his eyes simply flamed with irritation. But they were such lustrous hazel eyes that she blinked for a moment as she stared back into them. His hair appeared to be full of burnished lights, unless it was the effect of the coloured fanlight immediately above his head, and lay close to his scalp, like a metal cap, save where the ends turned back on themselves in an intrepid desire to curl crisply. He was wearing a white silk shirt, filled in at the neck with a spotted handkerchief, and black corduroy trousers. The trousers were paint-smeared, and as explanation of why they were paint-smeared, he waved a palette at Lucy. "Well, hurry up, what is it? We can't stand here all night, and as you can see, I'm in a hurry." "I rang three times," Lucy remarked, somewhat unnecessarily as it turned out. "I'm all too painfully aware of it." The hazel eyes gleamed menacingly. "When I think that you might have chosen any other time, any other night but tonight," then looking hard at her. "In any case, you wouldn't be the slightest use to me as a model. There's nothing sufficiently unusual about your face, and your figure's below average. That short fringe makes you look too young, and your bone formation is quite ordinary."